Episode 36, October the 11th, 2010. UK space policy and Yuri Gagarin's visit to Manchester and London in July 1961. Hello and welcome to AstroTalk UK. ATUK is a not-for-profit amateur astronomy podcast produced by me, Gurbir Singh, an amateur astronomer based in the UK. For more information, see the About and FAQ pages at www.astrotalkuk.org. Next year, April the 12th, 2011, marks the 50th anniversary of Yuri Gagarin's mankind's first step into space. It was the product of the accumulated technology of many countries over many years, but particularly driven by the political landscape resulting from the Second World War. Since then, successful robotic missions have visited the planets, asteroids, and comets. 24 men have gone to the moon, and a dozen have even walked on its surface. Subsequent achievements have fallen short of the expectations raised in the wake of Gagarin's flight. Gagarin himself spoke openly about his desire to go to the Moon and Mars. That sounds like a pipe dream today, but back in 1961, he was absolutely serious and realistic. So, what happened? Had the space race been won when Neil and Buzz landed on the Moon? Had the motivation born out of the political rivalries of the Cold War finally been exhausted? Perhaps the problems closer at home of poverty, population growth, environmental concerns raised to the top of the political agenda and forced governments into a pragmatic rethink on how they spent their cash. Big questions. Too big for this episode, where Dr. Chris Welsh from Kingston University provides a brief outline of the current status of space policy here in the UK. Dr. Welsh also happens to be the chair of the recently launched Yuri Gagarin 50 group, which has amongst its aims stimulate celebration and recognition of the global significance of Gagarin and his flight. The first person in space, the first person to see the Earth as a planet. After his flight, Yuri Gagarin embarked on a world tour, which included a four-day visit to the UK. Surprisingly, this included a visit to Manchester on 12th of July 1961. As chance would have it, Gagarin's first job was as a moulder in a foundry in Moscow. He came to the UK and Manchester at the invitation of the Amalgamated Union of Foundry Workers. There will be another episode focusing on Gagarin's UK visit next year. Did you see Gagarin in July 1961? Do you know someone who did? Share your memories. Drop me a note. info@astrotalkuk.org. With many months to go to next year's 50th anniversary, there are several events already being planned to celebrate mankind's first steps into space. Keep an eye on the events calendar at www.yurigagarin50.org. Dr. Chris Welsh, you're a lecturer in astronautics and space systems at Kingston University. How close did you come to, you talk about space, how close did you come to actually going to space?
Oh, many, many years ago now, in the kind of late 1980s, there was a commercial space program called the Juno program, which was designed to put the first UK person into orbit to go to the Mir space station. Helen Sharman was the person who ultimately went on that, and I got as far as the final 23.
And how many applicants were there? Do you
remember? Oh, it's difficult. I think they had 13,000 inquiries. I think they, if I recall correctly, they sent out 1,500 to 2,000 application forms. They whittled that down to what they called the long list of 150 then down to the shortlist of 35, and then proceeded to find reasons to, you know, get rid of people because they had to end up with four and then two and then one.
And you still have an ambition to make it out into space?
Oh yes, I'd love to go to space. I think the chances of me going as a career astronaut are probably a bit small now, but I'm hoping that maybe when I'm in my kind of mid-80s or something, my grandchildren will club together and buy me a day trip or something like that.
What is it you actually lecture in?
I run an undergraduate course, the full title of which is Aerospace Engineering, Astronautics and Space Technology. I'm responsible for the astronautics and space technology part of that. At the undergraduate level, it's broad-based astronautics, so orbit mechanics, rocket propulsion, space systems, thermal control, communication systems, attitude control. Basically, the plan is at the end of the course, students should be able to do what's called a kind of phase A level study, feasibility study, for a future space mission.
Amongst all the other things you do, you've been an advisor to various inquiries in the UK. Can you summarise the current state of play of space in the UK?
Space in the UK is poised on a cusp. Earlier this year, we had the formation of the UK Space Agency, and that was a very significant step forward. Before that, we had the British National Space Centre, which was a kind of strategic alliance of government departments. And the problem, from my point of view, with that was if something wasn't important to one of those departments, it didn't get any airtime with UKSA. Now the agency is its own body. It can now look at different areas, and there are certainly some areas such as launches and human space exploration that I would support, that I hope the agency will look at. That said, it hasn't received any extra funding, and in the current situation it seems fairly unlikely it will. We're just coming up for the comprehensive spending review. So we hope, but I think, to be realistic, we're not expecting the budget to go up. That is a shame, because there have been a number of studies. There was something called the Space Innovation and Growth Strategy, which was released at the start of this year. That was a kind of industry-led, with academic involvement, project last year. And what that showed fairly clearly was that the space sector, industrial space sector, grows at about 9% a year, irrespective of how the economy is doing. It produces about £6 billion, worth of input to the UK economy each year. And if more space projects were to be undertaken and more money was to be put into them, it would generate more benefits, more jobs for the UK. And this has been backed up, in fact, by a report, independent economic report that was released just last week by another organisation, saying pretty much the same thing, that UK space, if it had more money, could do a lot better. We're not talking about going to Mars or science missions. We're talking about kind of nuts and bolts commercial space activities.
How is the new coalition government doing? David Willetts, the Minister for Science, perhaps it's too early to tell, but if we had a Minister for Space, would that help?
Well, effectively, he is the Minister for Space as well as the Minister for Science. He does understand space. There's no doubt about that. Everything I've read coming from him shows that he's well aware of the benefits that space can bring and the UK's track record. But at the same time, there's a lot of calls for funding in a lot of different areas, and the government will have to decide what it's going to do. I would be overjoyed if they put more money into space, but I have to be, realistic and think that they probably won't.
Yeah, it's probably the worst time in the last decade or two to be talking about funding.
Absolutely.
How's the private sector doing in the UK?
Well, the private sector does extremely well, in terms of its productivity, in terms of making money. But inevitably, because of some of these space projects are quite big ones, say things like sort of Galileo, the European satellite navigation constellation, those are the sort of projects that governments need to get involved in, so that money will come back to industry. So if the government decides not to do a particular space project, or to not to participate in, say, a particular European space project, none of the money involved in making that space project happen will come back to the UK, and we won't see the benefits of it. So although the government may not fund things directly, by its choice of projects that it undertakes, okay, that can have a big effect on the money going into the space sector.
So Virgin Galactic, there is a British element to that, Falcon in the US. Are there any up-and-coming companies in the UK that might help?
Well, Virgin Galactic is an interesting one because it's a British company, because Virgin is a British company. You know, it had its headquarters in Piccadilly. But in terms of the technology, the intellectual property, that's all American. And there are a lot of kind of structures in place to stop anybody in the UK from finding out about that technology, because it's kind of considered to be defence-related. Until recently, it looked like Virgin might be trying to develop its business beyond space tourism and develop a kind of small satellite launcher. But in the last week, we've learned that appears to have been put on the back burner. The member of staff responsible for that is supposedly leaving Virgin. So we're not going to see Virgin, I think, launching payloads soon. Of course, SpaceX in the USA, moving ahead swiftly, and it's very gratifying to see a completely privately developed launch vehicle. That said, I think the general view is it's still not clear to outsiders how SpaceX expects to deliver the low-cost launch that they are claiming, because at the end of the day, it is still a rocket, and there are, even if it's a rocket which has been designed to be simple and straightforward, it's still a rocket, and there's a certain minimum cost that go with building rockets.
Looking back over the last 10, 15 years, up until then, it's just US and Russia. Now you have many more players out there in the international market. China, India, Japan. Traditionally, UK's only collaborated within the European Space Agency with Europe. Do you see much scope for that changing and perhaps evolving to other countries?
The UK has collaborated with NASA historically, as well, either directly or sometimes through ESA. And there has been a certain amount of scientific collaboration with other countries, such as sort of India and Japan and Russia. Obviously, China is an emerging space power. I think there's no doubt about that. People from time to time ask me when I think the next person will walk on the moon, and I say, well, I'm not really sure, but I think it'll probably be somebody from China who does it. I might be wrong. The Russians might get back there first. The Americans appear to be a little bit in the doldrums at the moment. They're shortly to lose any way of being able to put human beings into space, which is rather unfortunate, to say the least. They're going to have to rely on the Russians effectively to transport crew to the International Space Station.
Yes, with the demise of the space shuttle early next year.
In due course, of course, SpaceX will come on and they will deliver American astronauts, probably commercially. The government, NASA, will pay money to SpaceX to deliver astronauts to the space station, but SpaceX aren't quite there yet.
If I can change the subject, what's Yuri Gagarin 50 all about?
Well, Yuri Gagarin 50 really is an attempt to promote and celebrate the 50th anniversary of human spaceflight. Yuri Gagarin took his flight into space on the 12th of April, 1961. Mm-hmm. So the 12th of April next year, 2011, will be the 50th anniversary. There was a group of us who feel that this is partly a kind of very significant event for humanity to mark. And it also represents a kind of excellent opportunity for other things, because the one thing we know in the kind of science popularization, trying to interest people in science and technology, is that sort of the kind of human story, astronauts, work for the public. And so there's a kind of human story there, which once you've used it, it's what I call the Gagarin hook. Once you've got people's interest through saying this is Yuri Gagarin, it's 50th anniversary, you can then transfer that interest onto other things and use it to promote all sorts of STEM activities. I hope quite a wide range of cultural activities as well. I'd like to see it go farther than science, engineering, technology, and maths, and see art, poetry, sculpture. The British Council are hopefully going to be erecting a growing sculpture in London in July, on loan from the Russians. So there'll be cultural aspects as well.
Now, he was Gagarin visited the UK 4 days in July 1961, just 3 months after his historic flight. He visited London and Manchester.
Yes.
I guess there will be events taking place in those two cities, but elsewhere too?
Well, I hope so. Certainly, I think London and Manchester will inevitably be two of the focuses. But I'm hoping that people all over the UK will decide to mark the 12th of April in particular. We have a project called Rockets for Yuri, where we want people to build small rockets, stop rockets, water rockets, whatever, and at midday on the 12th of April, which is going to be during the school holidays, for people to kind of launch all their rockets at the same time, and remember Yuri Gagarin at that moment.
That's brilliant. And if people do want to find out some more details about an event taking place around Yuri Gagarin 50, where can they go?
The website, of course, www.yurigagarin50.org.
Dr. Chris Welch, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
The quote for this episode is from the Soviet government in 1961, following Gagarin's successful flight in Vostok 1. Perhaps they were deliberately winding up the Americans, but there is something warm and reassuring to see a couple of familiar words, all mankind, that are on the plaque left on the moon by the Apollo 11 astronauts. A 1961 official Soviet government and Communist Party announcement said, "We regard these victories in the conquest of outer space not only as an achievement of our people, but as an achievement of all mankind."